Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. It's impossible to ignore or look away from Donald Trump's outrageous early morning tweets and campaign rallies. Last night, during a lengthy rally in Phoenix, Arizona, he railed on the media for 20 minutes. His response to Charlottesville was so shocking that the coverage drowned out Russia. And then there's the inflammatory rhetoric about North Korea and the latest official who either steps down or is fired. But behind all of this, the Trump administration is fundamentally changing government. One of Donald Trump's explicit goals was to overturn hundreds of Obama-era regulations on everything from worker safety to environmental protections. The New York Times reports that the rollback of environmental, workplace, and health protections is being conducted in large part out of public view and often by political appointees with deep industry ties and conflicts of interest. The New York Times' Eric Lipton is leading a team of reporters who monitor and write about deregulation and former lobbyists who have high-profile positions in many federal agencies. These are often lengthy stories, and you can find the package of stories at yourcallradio.org. Eric Lipton is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for the New York Times, covering people and power, and he joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Public Citizen's Amit Narang. He says that the only winners from this unified agenda are the corporate interests whose deregulatory wish lists the administration has adopted wholesale. Amit Narang is a regulatory policy advocate with Public Citizen. That's a nonprofit that works to ensure that all citizens are represented in the halls of power. Amit focuses on the federal regulatory process, and he joins us from NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Hi, Amit. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. Glad to be with you.
Great to have you. Well, Eric, last week I was following a thread that you wrote on Twitter about all of the things that Donald Trump is doing behind the scenes. And as you pointed out, so many pundits are still saying that he hasn't gotten anything done, and they mostly point to repealing the Affordable Care Act. But as you tweeted, he's actually doing a lot. He's getting a lot done. When you look at the stories that you've all written and all the investigative pieces that you've written, what really stands out for you the most?
I would say that the three areas with the most intense activity so far are at the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Interior, and the Federal Communications Commission. And those agencies are moving at a really rapid pace to try to make major changes in U.S. regulatory policy. And it goes beyond simply undoing things that were sort of the second term Obama administration. For example, at the Federal Communications Commission, they are talking about rolling back regulations that restrict the concentration of broadcast television stations to something that's been in place for decades, that they want to revise those policies. So there is massive and radical change going on in regulatory policy at a pace unlike anything that the United States has seen back to the Reagan administration.
And Amit, what stands out for you?
So I agree with everything that Eric just mentioned, and I'd say that even though generally I'd agree that the most intense activity is occurring at those three agencies in terms of repealing regulations, rewriting regulations to weaken them, do new regulations that are deregulatory in nature, frankly, we're seeing this intense deregulatory period across agencies and across sectors when it comes to protecting the public's health, safety, protecting the environment, and Wall Street regulation as well. Definitely, you know, for all of those criticisms of Trump not being able to, you know, accomplish many of his campaign promises thus far, in terms of deregulation and making the public less safe, making the environment more polluted, making Wall Street less regulated, Trump is not doing so bad so far.
And we'll talk about specifics a little later in the show, but let's first talk about the people who are doing this, the people who are working for these federal agencies. Eric, your colleagues at the New York Times had a story just a couple weeks ago, actually, called The Business Links of Those Leading Trump's Rollbacks. In February, Trump ordered federal agencies to form teams that would identify regulations to roll back or eliminate. And through interviews, public records, and documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, the New York Times and ProPublica teamed up to identify many appointees to these groups. And you all revealed a string of possible conflicts, including some people who were hired who may be reviewing rules their previous employers tried to weaken or kill, and others who may personally profit if certain regulations are changed. Give us some names of some of the companies that are household names, for example. What names really stood out for you and your colleagues?
I mean, look at like Devon Energy, which is a company that is very intensely pushed to try to block Obama-era regulations regarding oil and gas rules on methane emissions, on fracking rules from the Department of Interior, from flaring on Bureau of Land Management property in the West. And this is a company that has sued and has, you know, intervened with Obama and to try to block these things. And its lobbyist is now the head of the National Economic Council person in the White House who oversees environmental and energy regulatory policy. So that the guy was serving as their lobbyist until January, and then went into the White House and oversees the rules regarding the Clean Power Plan and the methane rule. And he was given a waiver by the White House to actually work on the exact policies that he had just previously been paid to represent this for-profit company. So, I mean, that's the highest level in the White House, that's the case. But, I mean, in individual agencies, at the Interior Department, you have a lobbyist for Syngenta, the chemical company and biotech company that works in the agrochemical sector, who is now inside the Interior Department and working on issues that relate to Syngenta's interests. And you have at the department, the EPA, you have a woman that is overseeing toxic chemical regulation that used to work for the trade association that represents the chemical industry. So, you know, again, all you have to do is look under the hood at every agency that you want, and you will find these people who just left being lobbyists or lawyers for regulated sectors that are now the regulators. So the regulated have become the regulators.
Hmm. You also write about Daniel Giorgiani, previously worked for groups connected to the Koch brothers. The groups include Charles Koch Institute, the Koch Foundation, and Freedom Partners. And you also point out Benjamin Keel, previously a senior field director for North Dakotans for Common Sense Conservation, a political organization funded by agriculture and energy industry groups that defeated a measure to use oil tax revenue for environmental programs. Transportation, for example, Jeffrey Rosen worked at the law firm Kirkland & Ellis. He represented an airline trade group, General Motors, Hyundai, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I mean, the list just is massive. A lot of these people, most of us have never heard of. Eric, as a reporter, can you talk about the difficulties in finding these names and their connections?
Sure. I mean, just for a moment, and, you know, we all want people in government who are, you know, have expertise and experience in the sectors that they're working in. And so you could say, well, what, of course, these people have worked in the sectors that they're now helping regulate. And that has always been the case. The issue here is just the speed with which they have gone from that they're working on, in many cases, on the same particular matters that they handled as paid advocates. And normally that there's more of a delay, 2-year delay in the Obama administration for the most part in working on the same matters that you just handled for private sector clients. So the challenge in this administration is that at first, when all these people were starting to come in, we were having a hard time getting lists of who the political hires were. And then B, they were unwilling to provide copies of ethics waivers that were being granted to these individuals to work on the same matters that they had just left the private sector handling. And also they've set up these regulatory review committees in all these federal agencies, and my colleague Daniela Ivory and Robert Federici from ProPublica had a really hard time finding out. The agencies won't even tell us who were on these regulatory review committees. They're looking for rules that they want to kill. And what we found was when we dug down and did freedom of information requests was that some of the people on these regulatory committees, you know, just left industry again, and that they bring with them, you know, an industry agenda that they only, you know, they represented until in many cases, you know, January 19th, and now suddenly they are now on, you know, helping oversee this regulatory rollback. So they are not making it easy for us. I mean, something as simple as the White House logs, there's no longer, during the Obama administration, they would disclose who was coming into the White House. And at the EPA administrator has stopped publishing his calendar of who he's meeting with, and all of the top people at EPA used to publish their calendars as to who they were meeting with each day. They stopped doing that. So not only have the regulated become the regulators, but transparency has gone way down.
You also write about Daniel Simmons. He was vice president for policy at the Institute for Energy Research, a conservative think tank that opposed efforts to limit greenhouse gas emissions and has received funding from the Charles Koch Institute and the American Petroleum Institute. Amit Narang, when you look at this list of people working in education, energy, homeland security, the DOJ, transportation, how does this differ from the people who had these jobs under the Obama administration?
Right. So just as the period of deregulatory activity that we're seeing from Trump has been more intense than ever, maybe even more than Reagan, it's not surprising that that's being led by political officials, basically that are coming from the industries that the agencies they're now at are supposed to be regulating. Essentially, what we're seeing is the most intense form of regulatory capture, probably better termed industry capture, essentially capture of these agencies by the industries that the agencies are supposed to be regulating. And the end result, of course, is no regulation, what many industries will call self-regulation. We've seen over and over again that that leaves the public vulnerable and leads to massive deregulatory disasters, and also, frankly, in the daily lives of Americans, puts Americans at risk. So that's not a surprise, and frankly, it is important to note just how important and incredible the work the Times has done to reveal the backgrounds and the conflicts in these among these the personnel. Clearly, the Trump administration is not making it easy for them, and is not trying to make this very transparent. This is very much a question of our public believing that the government is working for the public, for everyday Americans, not for big business corporate special interests. Look, we're in a period where I think Americans are losing faith in the integrity of our government, in ways that we've never seen before, to a degree we've never seen before. And this makes it worse. You know, whether or not you can actually point to the type of direct pay-for-play corruption, and I think there are very close cases that the Times is uncovering, even the appearance of corruption is corrosive to faith in our government and corrosive to the democracy. And, I mean, it's impossible not to get the sense that there is, at the very least, an appearance of corruption when lobbyists are going straight from, the corporate special interests that they previously lobbied for to the agencies that they were lobbying, you know, to stop regulating those corporate special interests that they were working for. Those cases are more present than ever, and clearly, whatever waivers are being issued or not being issued, the administration is refusing to be transparent about it.
What about that, Eric? What about pay for play corruption?
Just to pause again for a sec, and it is certainly true that during the Obama administration, agencies like the EPA were populated to some extent by people who had come from the environmental community. There were people, for example, a gentleman from the Sierra Club who then, you know, came inside the agency and was helping play a role in drafting the Clean Power Plan. And not only were there people working within the EPA who came from the, you know, nonprofit world and the environmental world, but they were frequently interacting with the NGO, you know, nonprofit community to come up with the conceptual ideas for the Clean Power Plan. So, now those people, you know, they work for nonprofits, so their motivations were not, you know, for their stockholders' bottom lines. But, I mean, we do need to be clear that there are some parallels of self-interested people who go into the government and then play a role in setting policy. And that's occurring I would argue, and my observation is that it is happening much more broadly during the Trump administration than it was during Obama. In Obama, it was definitely the case at the EPA. In Trump, it really spread across the entire landscape of regulatory agencies. I mean, in terms of pay for play, I mean, you know, we aren't seeing, you know, I mean, there was a story I did about Carl Icahn, who recently stepped down from his role as an advisor to the president. It was an unpaid position, and he was not subject to the formal conflict of interest rules. And he was, while he was in the role of advisor to the president, he was strenuously advocating for a change in the renewable fuels program that would benefit a refinery company that he is the majority owner of. Turns out the EPA didn't go along with his recommendation, or it doesn't look like it's going to. But, I mean, that was the closest that I've seen to what was a real conflict, a financial interest in an outcome on a policy that an individual in power was pursuing. And so, but we haven't seen too many examples so far of, you know, of traditional corruption. But we are seeing a lot of interested parties who are playing a role in sort of helping define policies that benefit the sectors that they came from. And I agree that to some extent that is a form of corruption. It's self-interested players who are able to manipulate or change the system to benefit people that they're close with. And that's happening in a lot of places across the federal government right now.
Eric Lipton is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for the New York Times covering people in power. Eric is leading a team of reporters who monitor and write about deregulation and former lobbyists who have high-profile positions in many federal agencies. We're also joined by Amit Narang, regulatory policy advocate with Public Citizen. And if you'd like to join us, Eric Lipton will be with us for about 8 more minutes. If you have any questions about what the New York Times is uncovering, today we're talking about how the Trump administration is fundamentally reshaping the U.S. government. While the tweets and the rallies get wall-to-wall coverage, these issues definitely get coverage, especially in the print media, but they sure do deserve a lot more attention. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Eric, since you have to leave us in about 8 minutes, let's talk about some specifics. You wrote a lengthy piece a couple months ago, how rollbacks at Scott Pruitt's EPA are a boon to oil and gas. And you wrote about Devon Energy, which has a site in Fremont County, Wyoming. You write that they were prepared to install a sophisticated system to detect and reduce leaks of dangerous gases. They also discussed paying a six-figure penalty to settle claims by the Obama administration that it was illegally emitting 80 tons of hazardous chemicals every single year, like benzene, for example, a known carcinogen. But then something changed in February, just 5 days after Scott Pruitt, the former Oklahoma attorney general with close ties to Devon, was sworn in as head of the EPA. What happened 5 days after that?
What happened was that Devon notified the EPA that it was no longer interested in negotiating a settlement that it had previously indicated it was prepared to agree to, and that it was no longer prepared to pay a large fine or to make the significant changes in the emissions control systems on its operations there in Wyoming. And so what we saw was that was the first hint of a change on enforcement, which we know is happening more broadly now, but the negotiation postures of regulated companies is changing. And we heard this from the Industry Trade Association as well, is that they're basically, they know that they're not going to get hit as hard as they once were. So they're no longer willing to settle and just say, okay, this is the cost of doing business. We're just going to settle, take the fine, take the required changes in operating policy. They are taking a tougher stand when it comes to negotiating with the EPA and with the Department of Justice over violations. And Devon Energy not only stood to benefit from this new kind of more a lenient enforcement policy, this company also no longer has to collect data on methane emissions from its operations there in Wyoming, because Scott Pruitt, one of the first things he did was stop an effort to collect data on methane emissions. They also, I mean, the Bureau of Land Management is moving to terminate a rule that requires special measures during hydraulic fracturing on public lands, and the spot in Wyoming is federal land that they lease to do their oil and gas operations. And then also the methane flaring, which, you know, they vent methane because they don't they instead of just letting it leak into the air, if they haven't set up the capture equipment, it's the easiest way to just burn it off. That results in wasted natural gas that we are not collecting revenues on, and it also results in you know pollution to the environment. And the agency is moving towards rolling back that rule. I mean, there's a list of things that this one company is sort of situated to benefit from, and this is the same company that's given hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations to the Republican Attorneys General Association that Scott Pruitt oversaw when he served as Attorney General in Oklahoma. And it's also the same company that drafted letters for Scott Pruitt, who then sent them in to the EPA, to the Interior Department, to President Obama, letters that Devin wrote and that Pruitt simply put on his own stationery and sent in as Devon Energy used Scott Pruitt to try to attack the same regulations that now that these people are in power, the same regulations that they're rolling back. So Devon worked with Scott Pruitt when he was Attorney General to try to attack these things, and now Scott Pruitt is acting in his position as EPA Administrator to kill the same rules that they did not want.
You have a quote from Kathleen Sagama, president of the Western Energy Alliance. This is an association of oil and gas companies. She said, quote, "Not in our wildest dreams, never did we expect to get everything. We were kind of used to getting punished," end quote.
Yeah, the industry is quite happy right now. I mean, the only barrier to preventing, you know, them from wiping out their most hated list is the federal court system. So, for example, on the methane rule that Scott Pruitt sought to suspend, which the EPA had spent like 4 years trying to enact, which methane is a much more potent climate change gas than CO2. And there was the EPA adopt this rule to try to require oil and gas companies to do a better job of capturing methane, not only when they're drilling, but then when these oil and gas wells operate over the long term. And so Pruitt went in and basically just by, you know, signing a document said, we suspend this rule. But the environmental groups immediately sued, and the court so far has stayed Pruitt's suspension of that rule, saying that you can't simply, as a government, you know, administrative person, suspend the rule. You need an administrative law that backs up the adoption or the repeal of a rule. And so the only barrier right now for Kathleen Sagama and the Western Energy Alliance to getting basically everything they want on their list of the top 10 list is the federal court system. And the environmentalists and the Democratic state attorneys general are filing litigation almost every day right now to try to block these rollbacks. And so far they're having some successes, but it's really the federal court system that's going to be the backstop against a whole bunch of regulations going away quickly.
Right, and that's why it's also important to look at all of the judges that are being appointed by the Trump administration. But that's for a separate show. Eric, we have a call for you before we let you go. Let's hear from Roberta in San Leandro. Hi, Roberta. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks. It's another wonderful show. So I really wanted to just point out that the difference between the Obama administration and the current is that President Obama understood, and his appointees were they were public administrators. Government is supposed to protect we the people. And what has happened is that the corporate interest, which I believe is completely unethical and incorrect and corrupt because of what we're talking about here today. This is absolutely unethical on a public administrative level. This is not government. This is what Trump said he'd do. I'm going to run America like it's a company. You can't, because you put the majority of Americans under your heel. And that's wrong.
Well, thank you. And Steve Bannon, who's now back at Breitbart, said the goal of the administration was to deconstruct the state. Eric Lipton, final thoughts on that before we let you go?
I mean, you know, there are many arguments to suggest that we are overregulated and that the federal government is awfully good at writing rules and just writing more and more rules. And that there is no question that the second term of the Obama administration was a period of an incredible regulatory activity, and that the Obama folks were really frustrated with Congress and its inability to get just about anything passed. And so then they decided to use the power of the pen, the regulatory powers the executive branch has, to, you know, enact a whole series of new regulations that make the cost of compliance for companies larger. And so the real question is, what's the proper balance? And there is an interest in having, you know, regulations, appropriate regulations to protect the health and safety and financial well-being of the American public, but not to be so onerous that you are actually hurting people by requiring things that are so expensive and burdensome that you actually economically are severely hurting people. And so, I mean, I think that, you know, we're going to have to really look here closely and see. But what is happening, what's clear is that what's happening is radical, and that the pendulum has swung in such an extreme opposite of where we were at. And the pace of change, it really requires an intense scrutiny and effort by the New York Times and other news organizations and, you know, advocacy organizations to really, you know, at a minimum, we really have to keep track of what's going on, because if you're not watching, these things are changing, and they're going to affect every single person in the United States for years to come, far longer than the 4 or 8 year term that any particular president will serve. So it's just important that we not lose sight of what's going on. And the New York Times is committed, you know, significant financial resources to really keep a focus on this. And, you know, we have a team of reporters that are working on it, and not only the team of reporters, but we're collaborating with our colleagues who are regulatory experts in each of their own areas. And we're going to continue to cover this. And you know, it's important stuff, and we know that.
Well, thank you for your reporting, Eric, and we'd love to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Eric Lipton is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for The New York Times. He's leading a team of reporters who monitor and write about deregulation and former lobbyists who now have high-profile positions in many federal agencies, including the EPA, the Department of the Interior, the Education Department. The list goes on. Amit, before we go to break, would you like to respond to Roberta's call?
Sure. I think she makes an excellent point. I mean, I really do think it brings up a bigger philosophical issue. Who should we be having, regardless of the administration, who should we be having staffing these regulatory agencies? Should these folks, whatever the administration is, be at arm's length with the industry they're supposed to regulate? I think the public believes that, yes, that should be the case, that if wherever you're coming from, if you're coming into a regulatory agency, if it's the EPA, you better believe in environmental protection, and you're not coming in with an agenda to allow polluters to regulate themselves. And that's the case across government, that we need folks that actually believe in the regulatory missions and believe in the laws passed by Congress, like the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Wall Street Reform Act, that definitely make these agencies responsible for putting out regulations that implement those laws, that protect the public, that hold Wall Street accountable, that hold corporate bad actors accountable, and deter harms to the public. So, and I think this is a bigger philosophical, and I'm happy, frankly, that this bigger philosophical debate is happening. But clearly, it's because Trump has put in place folks with fairly conflicted and, in many cases, radical backgrounds that are, deregulatory in nature.
Amit Narang is a regulatory policy advocate with Public Citizen, a nonprofit that works to ensure that all citizens are represented in the halls of power. And on today's Your Call, we are looking beyond the tweets and the rallies to talk about how Donald Trump's administration is fundamentally reshaping the U.S. government. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about the best responses to this weekend's rallies in San Francisco and Berkeley, which are expected to attract white supremacists and armed militia groups. Concealed weapons are allowed at San Francisco's Crissy Field with the proper permit, and the entire San Francisco police force is expected to work during Saturday's rally. So what do you think are the best ways to stand up to the kind of racism that we saw in Charlottesville? Are you planning to go to these rallies? What are your thoughts? That's tomorrow. And then on Friday, it's our media roundtable, and we're going to be speaking with ProPublica's Alec McGillis, and he wrote a story that's directly connected to what we're talking about today, about what's happening behind the scenes at the Trump administration. And his piece is called, Is Anybody Home at HUD? A Long-Harbored Conservative Dream. The dismantling of the administrative state is taking place under Secretary Ben Carson. So we'll be talking about that on Friday. Today, we are talking about how Donald Trump and his team are fundamentally reshaping the United States government. And we're joined by Amit Narang, regulatory policy advocate with Public Citizen, a nonprofit that works to ensure that all citizens are represented in the halls of power. And now I would like to welcome Danny Vinnick to the show. Danny is assistant editor of The Agenda at Politico, where he writes, The Things Trump Did While You Weren't Looking. And Danny joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Danny. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you. Wow, I've been reading this, and there's so much in these stories. So basically what you're doing is mini headlines, and then you give an overview of what's going on. And just a couple examples. The Department of Homeland Security ends parole program for Central American children. The DHS canceled the approval of 2,700 kids who had been approved for parole but had not received final send-off. There's another one, the end of Operation Choke Point. This was an Obama-era initiative to cut off predatory lenders and online merchants from the banking system by cracking down on banks and payment processors. That is just two of so many. Can you talk about what sparked this series of stories?
So each week I actually write this story, which is five things Trump did while you weren't looking. And there are, you know, a lot of headlines coming out of Washington that have to deal with the Russia investigation, that have to deal with different things coming out of the White House. But the government is very vast, and there's a lot happening, and there are a lot of people who are really making decisions, making policy changes that don't get the attention that any of these other big stories get. So, you know, right now Trump has installed people in all these agencies, and they've been approved by Congress, and while he's been slow at it, they are there now, and they've been operating for a few months. So we're starting to see real attention and changes policy-wise. So each week I've been trying to keep track of, you know, what different agencies are doing, where they're making policy changes, and kind of the implications of those changes.
What stands out for you the most?
There are a few different things that kind of stand out the most to me. I would say, one, the EPA is doing a lot to roll back Obama-era environmental regulations. There are a host of different areas where Administrator Scott Pruitt has targeted Obama-era rules. This isn't exactly a surprise, given Pruitt's background and his history of going after environmental regulations when he was previously in state government. The other area is also the Labor Department has been pretty active at going back after some Obama-era rules, like the overtime rule and the fiduciary standard. Both of those were kind of marquee Obama-era policies to allow workers to save more money and to raise the overtime threshold so that more workers could benefit from overtime pay, and both of those have come under attack in the past few months. More broadly than that, the government has also kind of shut down operating and offering new regulations. There's been a lot more effort on the deregulatory side than on the actual, like, making new regulations that have a big impact. So while the Obama administration put forward a lot of new regulations on that light, the Trump administration has moved in the opposite direction. So those are two big themes that I've noticed.
The one that you wrote on June 23rd talks about the Labor Department loosening a rule on beryllium exposure. As you write, you haven't heard of it since chemistry class, but beryllium is a chemical toxic to lung tissue, and the Department of Labor took years to finalize a rule protecting workers from exposure and didn't issue the final version until the trail end of Obama's presidency on January 9th. You write that on Friday, again, this is in June, the Department of Labor proposed a new rule on beryllium exposure. It doesn't change the original exposure limits, but instead eliminates additional safety requirements for the construction and shipping yard industries. Tell us a little bit about this.
This is a rule that the Obama administration put out right at the end of the presidency, and it was highly sought after by many labor groups, by many workers who were worried about some of the beryllium exposure that they would get on the job. And this rule was, you know, has come under some target from business groups and people who think it's too onerous. And so the Department of Labor has started this process of rolling back components of it. Some of the broad ideas stay in place, but there are different little sections of it that are now coming under threat, and DOL is basically undertaking a full rulemaking process to really change this rule.
Amit, can you talk about some of these chemical rules that are being changed? These are really important.
Sure, and let me begin with beryllium, because Public Citizen has definitely been at the forefront of pushing the Department of Labor, specifically the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. That's the sub-agency at the Department of Labor that produces and enforces workplace safety rules. We've been pushing them for decades, petitioning them for decades to update very badly outdated beryllium standards. Still on the OSHA website, they say that the beryllium standard, you can look it up yourself now if you'd like, that the beryllium standard is 40 years old. And of course, a lot has happened, including a lot of evidence to show how toxic beryllium is to those in the workplace. And it's very disappointing to see what was an overdue but much needed rule that came out at the end of the Obama administration now significantly weakened by the Trump administration, and really not on any kind of substantial grounding in terms of analysis or evidence. They're simply saying that this rule, which will limit the exposure of this clear toxin, will not provide any benefits if we limit that toxin in the construction and shipyard industries. Well, the problem there is that the Obama administration just a few months before said, well, that's not true, that it actually will provide significant benefits to those workers in the shipyard and construction industry, health benefits by preventing, you know, exposure to beryllium. And again, if you look at the details of what the Trump OSHA department is trying to do, they're not saying why basically benefits to workers that the Obama administration found very clearly, that they simply are assuming they no longer exist. There's nothing that's happened in between the Trump and the Obama administrations with respect to beryllium would warrant changing findings, well-documented findings under the Obama administration. This is the type of, in the weeds administrative maneuvering, I'd even say manipulation, to try to change, you know, the benefits and the costs of certain rules to make them look more costly than beneficial to the public, that we're going to see not only, you know, at this agency, but at other agencies. And it's disappointing to see the Trump administration basically make political decisions, essentially, with respect to favored corporate interests that fly in the face of science and health and economic analysis. Now, in terms of other toxins, look, there are hundreds of chemicals on the market currently. Because the government has not studied them, just how toxic they are to everyday Americans, to our children. We now have a bipartisan law that was passed last Congress, the Toxic Substances Chemicals Act, that empowers the EPA to start studying these chemicals, seeing how toxic they are, and potentially taking them off the market. But as Eric mentioned, you know, the person heading up the implementation of that law is coming straight from the chemical industry. So, until we see that she's actually interested in regulating chemicals, finding out how dangerous they are and taking them off the market, we're not going to be holding out too much hope that she's going to be doing what the EPA's mission is, which is to protect the public from these kinds of harms.
Amit Narang is regulatory policy advocate with Public Citizen. We're also joined by Danny Vinnick, assistant editor of The Agenda at Politico, where he writes, 5 Things Trump Did While You Weren't Looking. And those stories are at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about how the Trump administration is fundamentally reshaping the government. It's very hard to look away from the tweets and the rallies, but what's happening behind the scenes is incredibly important and deserves more attention. If you have any questions or comments for our guests about what is going on behind the scenes, how deregulation, getting rid of protections, will affect our water, our health, our air, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Also, what goes on in schools, the workplace. I mean, there's just so many things that are changing so quickly. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Let's hear next from Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. One of the things that's happened with the Trump administration, and when I saw the article and the pictures in the paper last week, I just sat down and cried. It was so awful. Because of the new hunting regulations, it is now okay to hunt bears in their dens during hibernation, and also to hunt wolves from the air with drones or planes. And there was a picture in the paper of these orphan baby black bears, mostly in Alaska, because the mothers are being killed. Last year there were no baby bears. This year, for just these few months, there's 15, and they're trying to find places for them in the zoos. And I know there's other regulations that are probably more detrimental, but this one just really got to me.
Yeah, I remember this. I mean, it's been, I think this happened in April, and it's easy to forget things that happened just a couple months ago. But you're so right. I'm reading from a BuzzFeed story. Shooting wolves and bears from airplanes is once again legal in Alaska after Trump signed legislation to allow the hunting of predator animals. The legislation signed Monday repeals a federal rule put in place during the Obama administration that banned the aerial shooting or baiting of animals with food in order to curb the population of bears, wolves, and other predators. Amit, have you been following this one or others like this at Public Citizen?
So, yes. And actually, it's a very tragic rule for sure in terms of, allowing wildlife to be hunted in these, kind of barbarian ways. This one is actually an interesting one because it came from a few months back, as you mentioned, and it was kind of a joint congressional Trump effort because essentially what happened is that Congress used a pretty obscure law called the Congressional Review Act to review many regulations that Obama issued in the last months of his administration, review them and then vote them down. And the key to remember here is that under the Congressional Review Act, you don't need to have enough votes to break a filibuster in the Senate, meaning 60 votes. It's a bare majority in all of Congress, in both the House and the Senate, to kill one of these late-term Obama rules. And so that's what they did. And they did it with a number of other rules, rules like, an FCC rule that restricts big telecom companies from selling your internet data, your internet browsing history to third parties and making money off of your private internet data. Other rules that prevented, for example, mining companies that are removing mountaintops or doing mining near streams to put all of that toxic waste from the mining operations into those streams that surround the mining operations, called the stream protection rule. Unfortunately, the other piece of this Congressional Review Act that's so problematic is that there's language in the legislation that says if one of these rules that Congress votes down, if an agency tries to redo it in the future, they're going to have a difficult time. They may be permanently blocked from reissuing these rules. We're talking about how, Eric was saying in some instances maybe he believes there's overregulation and that it can cause economic growth to be stunted. I don't see how allowing this kind of hunting of bears is going to create jobs. I don't see how selling, internet browsing history of citizens is going to create jobs. These are handouts to the telecom industry, to big corporate interests. And really, this administration has been talking a lot about draining the swamp. But in terms of who they're putting in place to deregulate and the types of actions they're taking that directly you can draw a line as to which industry it benefits, this is anything but draining the swamp.
To that point, we have an email from Clyde who says, I'm listening to your discussion about the Trump administration's pillaging of America's regulatory protections. My concern is the overwhelming use of the word regulations when the administration is taking away protections. Which of these two words effectively communicate what's really at stake? Danny, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm not exactly sure if I have a preference on either word. I mean, we're talking about the regulatory system, and this is kind of a function of government that is, you know, an administrative procedure, and we want to kind of use neutral words that describe what exactly the government is doing. At the same time, a lot of these do provide protections for the environment, for public health, for workers, and so in certain situations, I think protection can be an accurate word. But when we're talking broadly about kind of the general changes the Trump administration is making, you know, these are regulations. This is kind of what we're working with and what the government has been doing.
You have another one in your piece, Danny, about the Trump administration ending an Obama retirement program. I remember reading about this, just wondering why. In 2014, the Treasury Department created a new way for Americans to save for retirement, allowing people without access to a workplace retirement plan to open a starter account known as MyRA. This didn't get that many signups, I'm guessing, because I had never heard of it. I don't think most people know about it. But you report that the Treasury Department announced it was shutting down the MyRA program. Why?
I mean, the main reason they were shutting it down is just because it didn't get that much attention. But this was an Obama program that was announced in 2014 that was a big deal for the Obama administration. They made a big effort to try to get people to sign up for it. Obama spoke about it. The Treasury Department put a lot of resources into advertising it. And it was designed basically to extend workplace retirement plans to workers who don't have access to them. It allowed workers to save for retirement. Participants could contribute almost $6,000 a year in pre-tax earnings to some sort of a savings account. And this was really supposed to extend the ability for Americans to save for retirement. Obama, is one of the main Obama-era policies to do so. But it just never seemed to catch on very much. And even when it was shut down, it received very little attention beyond, a few basic articles that this thing wasn't going to exist anymore. And, as you mentioned, most people haven't heard of it, which I'm sure is disappointing to many people in the Obama administration. But I'm not sure how long it would have lasted, even if there was a different president or with a different party in the White House.
Well, it's just too bad because so many people are contractors nowadays and they need something like this.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously huge problems with getting people to save for retirement and expanding retirement opportunities, and that's why there was so much energy and excitement in the Obama administration for this program when they first announced it. But it just hasn't worked out as they hoped for kind of unknown reasons. It just hasn't really caught on, and so it's kind of back to the drawing board to think of new ways to expand retirement options.
Danny, before we take another call, what else stands out for you? I mean, just to read a couple of things that you're writing about, reinstating property seizure, Trump's first big regulatory blueprint, selling rice to China, no more traveling to North Korea. I mean, this is just from one of your pieces, but what else stands out for you that you think listeners should know about?
There's stuff going on everywhere. Immigration is a big one. I mean, Trump ran on rolling back with a lot of Obama-era immigration policies, and Attorney General Jeff Sessions has put a lot of those into effect. The Department of Homeland Security has as well. There's been a broad immigration crackdown. It's gotten a lot of coverage, so I'm not sure it's that as much of a hidden change, but there's been a major change in immigration policy enforcement. There's been more effort into deporting people. There's been more effort into focusing on border security. There's no border wall yet. But this has obviously been a priority for the Trump administration, and it's clearly showing up in both their rhetoric and statistics in terms of border arrests going up and border detainment going down at the border.
We have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Just a comment. I can't remember who made this or said this. A quote that capitalism and democracy are not compatible. You can't have one with the other. That's essentially what I think is driving the Trump machine, if you will. I guess the question I have to your guest is this. I mean, if we're going to rely on the state attorney generals to try and deal with this issue, and the people of the country are going to have a hard time getting their elected officials to do anything about this, I'm not very optimistic about how this thing is going to turn out. So I guess the question I have is, in California, we can't even get progressive legislation passed in our own state. So I'm just curious what your guest thinks is going to be the eventual outcome of this, and whether or not there is any ability to try and alter this on the part of the electorate.
All right. Well, thank you. Amit, you're in Washington. What are you hearing from Democrats about this? We hear them talking about Russia a lot, but what about what's going on behind the scenes?
Right. And so there are certainly some Democrats that are talking about this issue, pointing out that this, deregulation effort is more radical than it's ever been in the past and going faster than it's ever gone in the past as well. Look, there's some public outcry. I think public pressure will be critical. I don't know necessarily that the administration will pay attention to it or care. And to that extent, I agree with the caller that it's a little disappointing to have to fully rely or largely rely on state AGs to try to stop this deregulation train. But to be honest, I think that they can do quite a bit in that vein. Eric was talking about how federal courts are, in the end, the last backstop to deregulating in these questionable, potentially illegal ways, to have state AGs, we're going to have advocacy groups like ours that have litigation components enforce the laws. Look, this is about law enforcement. Congress passes laws, like I said before, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act. They establish these agencies to implement these laws, Wall Street Reform Act, food safety laws, chemical safety laws, workplace safety laws. And you can't just have agencies or personnel at agencies with an ideological or opposition to regulation or a financial interest in deregulation just willy-nilly making these decisions in contravention, basically in opposition to the laws that require those agencies to issue regulations that protect the public, that regulate Wall Street, that protect consumers, et cetera. And so, the last backstop will be in many cases state AGs that say to these agencies, you have a duty to protect the law. EPA, you have a duty to protect the environment and address environmental threats like climate change. In many cases, judges are going to have to agree with them because the law is clear. These are not regulations that are coming out of thin air, like many on the right, would have folks believe. This is kind of a popular myth. No, this is implementing the laws passed by Congress to protect the public. These are some of the, finest laws ever passed by Congress.
Danny, we're getting emails from listeners who say, what should we do here? Should we call members of Congress, go to town halls, submit comments? What are you hearing from Democrats in D.C., Danny? Just quickly.
All of that pressure certainly helps. I mean, there have been a few occasions where the Trump administration has reversed policies after facing a backlash, either from lawmakers on the Hill or from their constituents. The Education Department reversed a policy that they were changing on the servicers of student loans. That was kind of a big moment that showed that, if there is some backlash to some of these policies, it can make a difference. So any sort of contact, any sort of involvement in the political process, lawmakers can be listening, and if they put pressure on agencies, on political leaders, that can make changes. So being involved in the process certainly helps.
Danny Vinnick is assistant editor of The Agenda at Politico, where he writes the regular story, Five Things Trump Did While You Weren't Looking. Amit Narang is a regulatory policy advocate with Public Citizen. Amit and Danny, thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, what is the best response to this weekend's rallies in San Francisco and Berkeley, which are expected to attract white supremacists and armed militia groups? How are you planning to stand up against the kind of racism we saw in Charlottesville? That's tomorrow. Hope you can join us for that. Your Call is produced here at KALW. If you'd like to listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Ali Budner for producing today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.